Hi, I'm Elise Villani, and you're listening to the How's That podcast.
How's that? You missed the bound, I called you up. How's that?
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of How's That, the cricket podcast with me, Ollie.
And me, Lily.
So this week, we, of course, have the second part of a little mini-series, I guess we can call it. We had Emma Mannix-Cheeves on last week, who was one of the two Tasmania Centurions from last season's WNCL final. We're back this week with the other Centurion, who, of course, is Elise Villani, cricketer, broadcaster. She can do it all. She was, you know, brilliant guest. She came on a little while ago now. It's slightly dated, a few weeks old, the interview, but we're looking forward to getting this episode out and letting you guys hear it.
Yeah, so I guess before we get into our interview, like we usually do, we've got a little bit of cricket to chat. We've got one WNCL game, but we've also got the Big Bash final. Now, I think if I remember correctly, last week you said you reckon Sixers are going to win it, and I said Scorchers are going to win it. So I've been correct. Scorchers won. So the semi-final was between the Sydney Sixers and the Brisbane Heat, which the Brisbane Heat won by 4 wickets, which I think was not really what I was expecting. Sydney Sixers, you can't win a semi-final with 116 off 20 overs. That's just not going to get you places, especially like when you want to win and play in a grand final.
Unless you're England under 19s.
Yes, that's true. That's true. In that case, you can get 90 and then you can still win. But yeah, it was an interesting game for sure. Like I said, I didn't think Heat weren't favourites going into this game. But then, obviously, progressing into the final, they let it slip a bit.
So, of course, then we had the final of the Big Bash that was on Saturday night. I actually didn't watch much of this game because I was incredibly busy over the weekend, but I was getting score updates from the game. And to be fair, when I heard that the Heat had put their score up in the first innings, I thought, you know what, the Heat, they're actually a chance here. And, you know, I kept looking at the score throughout the evening before I could actually sit down and watch the last bit of the game. I'm thinking, you know, the Heat are right on top here, that Scorchers are needing absolutely loads to win, you know, getting up to around 2 a ball. And you're just thinking, oh, they're in a bit of trouble here. Ashton Turner gets dismissed. And you're thinking Cooper Connolly and Nick Hobson, the Heat are probably in the best position here. And then we all saw what happened with Josh Brown. A horrible drop. He's had a wonderful season. And I just hope that this doesn't knock him too much. Drops Cooper Connolly and the pair of them, Connolly and Hobson, go and, you know, win the game for the Scorchers and win their 7 millionth BBL title. It's crazy how many they've won now. Someone needs to step in and win a few games. But just on the Big Bash finals, I think the treatment of the Brisbane Heat, I will admit to this as well, because obviously I didn't think they were going to get past the Sixers. I thought the Sixers were going to win. I thought it was going to be a Sixers-Scorchers final. I think we all did. But the fact that they were called nobodies in the lead-up was interesting. Let's be diplomatic and say it was interesting. Obviously it gave their motivation for sure, and they put up a really good fight, but in the end unable to get over the line.
Yeah, I think me and my family were all kind of hoping, and I think probably a lot of people were also hoping for a Heat win, purely because you want to go for the underdogs. You know, if you're not a Scorchers fan, you kind of want to go for the underdogs and the team that you don't expect to make it to that final. And I think it was a very similar situation to the Strikers Sixers final in the WBBL. You know, we were kind of hoping that the Heat would just surprise everybody and win over the Scorchers, but not to be, unfortunately. I think, yeah, obviously that dropped catch was the turning point in the game. The Heat were looking quite on top, and you're thinking, right, you know, they should get them home here. But that drop catch, obviously, yeah, left them in lots of trouble. And Cooper Connolly, I think everybody was just like, right, this is his moment. If he's gonna do it, and if he's gonna make it, this is his moment. And I'm quite glad that he did it, to be honest, because it's really good to see the young upcoming talent, you know, be given this stage and be given this opportunity to show what they can do. But something that I thought was really funny was, I don't know whether you saw it, but Peter Hatzoglu put something on his story that night, and it was like a meme, which was like, because Nick Hobson, right, he's just got a regular job. Like, he just plays cricket, but he's a senior consultant, right? And he does like banking or stuff like that. So Peter put a meme on which said, it's got a picture of Nick Hobson's LinkedIn profile, and it's just gone, you just lost to a LinkedIn senior consultant.
wait, he put that up on his story.
Peter put that up on his story.
He's a cult hero, isn't he, Peter, at Song Glue? I saw the quote from his company saying, he rang up and he said, you're not coming back in Monday, are you? I saw that. I didn't see that from Peter at Song Glue. Unbelievable. It's funny. But his story, on a serious note, I think you're right. A lot of Australia, particularly outside of WA, wanted to see the Heat win. But there are a lot of really, really nice storylines outside of out of the Scorchers win. Mm-hmm. Including the two that were at the crease at the end of the game. Hobson, obviously, being a consultant, having a regular job. I'm not sure how long he's going to have that job, given how well his cricket season is going. And Cooper Connolly, who I think was called, what do you call it, a surf rat by Mitch Marsh, taking the Scorchers over the line. It is quite an amazing story, and fair play to the pair of them and the rest of the Perth Scorchers for winning the men's Big Bash title and Big Bash again, done for another summer.
Yeah, it's just flown by so quick, hasn't it? But on that kind of topic of the Big Bash final, Cooper Connolly or Nick Hobson, if you're listening, chuck us a message. We'll get you on the pod and we could chat all things Big Bash final. But other than that, that was the Big Bash, and it was a fun summer, wasn't it? I think we've had a few moments where we've really enjoyed getting down to some games. It's been highs and lows. Both our teams ended up at the bottom of the ladder, which is probably not what either of us wanted, but nevertheless, it was lots of fun and a good summer.
We had the Twitter discourse that we actually haven't spoken out verbally a couple of weeks ago, actually saying that, you know, two of the games that I saw this summer, I saw the men's side play four times. Twice we won, twice they were against the Strikers. So, how's that? I contended that how's that is green for the summer. You said that you finished higher and you've obviously won the WBBL title. So I suppose it's blue, but we'll call it a draw. We'll call it a draw.
Yeah, none of us won, so fair play in the Big Bash.
I think I'm going to put on record just quickly by saying it's thank you, first of all, for allowing me to experience the summer cricket with you. Thank you for letting me come to Adelaide twice and watch the Stars ruin your biggest night of the year. But it's been fun. It's been fun.
Yeah, no, it has been fun. And like you said, obviously. We'll call it even purely because, yeah, you've won against us, but we placed higher, so there's give and take for both situations, really.
You've actually won a final. That's probably more important.
That is true. But I was being a bit more humble and I wasn't going to mention it, but that's fine. If you want to bring that into it, then I'll take it. Should we move on just to the WNCL very quickly? There's only been one game in this time period since the last episode, which is the Scorpions versus Tasmania Tigers. Tasmania winning by 6 wickets. Now, this was a game to watch purely because both teams are in extremely good form. South Australia not actually losing a game up until this point, and Tasmania losing a couple to ACT, well, losing one to ACT as well, but being super on top of their game. So South Australia batted first. Emma Dubrow made 48. Courtney Webb was 110 not out. Maddie Penner, 27. Annie O'Neill, 25. 2 wickets from Nicola Carey. One each from Molly Strano and Sasha Maloney and Macy Gibson. But then Tasmania, just too good, really, when you've got someone like Lizelle Lee opening the batting and getting 77. Elise Lani only got 9. Nicola Carey got 60. Emma Mannix-Jeeves was 59 not out. And Naomi Sullenberg got 2. And Molly Strano, 17 not out. So, yeah, didn't really use many of their batters, to be fair. They've got quite a long list and can carry on going for ages, did Tasmania. But yeah, so Scorpions obviously set 244 for 6 off their 50, and Tasmania chasing it down with 6 balls left. But that is the only WNCL game we have up until this point. The ladder is currently looking like Queensland in first, Tasmania in second, South Australia in third, Western Australia fourth, Victoria fifth, New South Wales sixth, and ACT seventh. Talking about WNCL and talking about Tasmania getting a nice win, we will move on to this week's interview. So yeah, like we mentioned at the beginning, we spoke to Elise Villani, who was just, it's another one of those pinch me sort of interviews, along with someone like Sophie Devine and Kate Cross, where it's just like, wow, we've actually spoken to one of Australia's like greatest female cricketers. Like Cricket Australia put something up on their feed earlier where it was like voting for the T20 GOAT, and everyone had to like pick one or two, and they were doing like this big graph to find out who was the best. And some of them have been on our podcast, one of them being Elise Villani, which is just crazy. But she was brilliant, wasn't she? And obviously had so much to talk about her cricket career.
Yeah, it was, and it was actually really interesting. I'm actually going to bring this up now while we've got the chance. It was a few days earlier than this interview. I was in the commentary box for the Stars and Strikers game at MCG, the game that Elise Villani was commentating. And I, you know, I was down on the boundary with Elise Villani and was just saying, I heard you've been chatting with Lily of How's That the Cricket podcast. And, you know, she's been talking, you know, looking forward to having you on. And she didn't realise that I was the Ollie in the emails who's actually on the podcast. So she's like, oh, yeah, that Ollie, that makes so much sense. So we had a good laugh about that, which I still find funny. But yeah, Elise Villani, brilliant interviewee. Obviously, she's done so much for Australian cricket, for Tasmanian cricket. To be fair, wherever she's played, she's gone and made runs. So yeah, it was wonderful to chat to her. And again, like you say, it's one of those pinch me moments. It's someone you never think you're going to speak to or never think you're going to have on your podcast. So it was wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, so enjoy our interview with Elise Villani.
And there it is. She'll swing it out to deep, long on, a single, and look at the celebration. That's a captain century if ever there was one. Elise Villani, take a bow.
Welcome, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Do you mind just telling us where in the world you are at the moment and what teams you're associated with at this point in time?
Okay, I am currently in Brisbane. I just did the commentary for yesterday's game with the women's ODI against Pakistan. And then I'm heading off tomorrow to Canberra to play myself. I currently play for the Tassie Tigers in the WNCL and the Hobart Hurricanes in the WBBL.
So that must be a pretty hectic schedule for you at the moment, commentating on Big Bash and then playing WNCL at the same time. How have you found that? And yeah, how have you managed to split your time between both?
It has been pretty busy. There's been a lot of flights lately and a lot of sort of flexibility around training, which has been really cool, I guess. For me, Cricket Tasmania have been awesome in supporting me to allow me to keep, I guess, adding to like my work experience. I'm very lucky that I get to play cricket, but it's not going to last forever, unfortunately. So I do need to keep thinking about what life after cricket looks like. So I'm busily training around a commentary schedule at the moment and doing as many team sessions as I can. But as I said, the coach, Jude Coleman, and the rest of the organisation have been very flexible and very supportive in allowing me to, I guess, marry the two up at the moment, knowing that it is just a pretty short, busy window for commentary and I'll be back fully with the team in just a matter of a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so if we go to WNCL, how have you found that so far? You know, Tasmania been off to a good start, and to say the least, obviously defending champions. So how have you found, yeah, this season up to this point?
Well, it's been an interesting season, to be honest. We started pre-season with our coach, Sally Ann Beams, and then she obviously got the high performance manager role at Cricket Tas. So she left us, and then we had our assistant coach at the time, Dan Marsh, take over. But he made it clear that he was just the interim coach at that time and that he was pretty excited to go for the Australian assistant role. So, and then we've got Jude Coleman as our head coach. So this is our third head coach this season. So it could have been a destructive season, I guess, but credit to all the girls and for Jude and Dan when they did take over. It's just sort of felt like everyone's meant to have been where they were. So the fact that Jude sort of slotted in so nicely and felt like she's been there for a lot longer than just a few weeks is credit to her, a credit to the organisation, and really a huge amount of credit goes to the girls in being able to be adaptable and flexible and just sort of roll with the punches a little bit this season. We spoke as a group about not wanting the coaching stuff to distract us from our goals this season and wanting to make sure that we continue to own our brand of cricket, no matter who was in charge. So it was an interesting few months there trying to work out who was going to coach us, but it's all worked out really well, I'm pleased to say.
Yeah, it certainly has by the looks of things. And obviously, if you look at Tasmania as a state, it's a state that probably shouldn't be challenging up the top of the WNCL tables given resources, but is, and you know, consistently doing so. Does it feel like you're, you know, against the odds in a kind of thing where you don't have the resources of a Victoria or New South Wales? And if so, how nice is it to sort of, you know, not have to worry about all of that, play cricket and still be winning loads of games?
Well, it's an interesting one. We are obviously a smaller state and therefore a smaller organisation. But I feel like we're resourced really well. I feel like you know, the CEO in Dom Baker and obviously Sally Ann Beams, now the high performance manager, they really provide us, you know, with all the resources that we need. We get fantastic turf access. We actually get more turf access than what I had been getting in Victoria previously with the marquee during pre-season. So, and we've got, you know, the gym and great staff and everything that we need. So I feel like we're actually really well resourced and really well looked after by the organisation, despite being a smaller state.
Yeah. And if you, and if you take that on, sort of, you sort of moved to Tasmania a few years ago now, and you, you know, you've moved down and you're playing a lot of good cricket. Do you feel like the onus was sort of on you alongside some of the old, you know, the more experienced heads in the team, just to sort of progress Tasmanian cricket and take it from where it was to tabletopping team it now is?
Yeah, I think it was sort of, I think it was getting there. I think it had certainly been building over the time that Sally-Ann Beams had been in charge, and also the amount of support that she was also getting from the organisation as well. So every year it felt like Tassie was sort of on the rise a little bit. And then I guess with myself and Molly coming down, it just added two more experienced heads at that point in time and allowed us to sort of have a bit of a senior group to help with the younger kids in our team as well. So we've got a really nice balance where, you know, there are some senior players on the list, and we are able to, you know, continue to help the younger girls on the list as well. So we've got a great I guess span across our list where there's a great mix. And yeah, I think it's just sort of like on everyone really to buy into the program. We've been really clear about how we want to go about our cricket, and really clear on our brand. And every single person within the squad has really, you know, bought into that. So it's been really pleasing to know that we all sort of feel like we're on the same journey together, and we're really well supported from the organisation as well. So I think everyone's sort of taken the ownership, so to speak, but we definitely have really clear goals and really clear processes in place.
Yeah, it looks like it. And Tasmanian cricket looks in a really, really good spot now, especially, you know, with the WNCL win last year. You've got cricketers, you know, aspiring cricketers on the rise, you know, young players who are playing out of their skin at times, it looks like. And of course, that cultivated in the final win last year, your first WNCL title against South Australia. They say that squad wins championships. How important was that sort of in winning that final? And how much did that sort of, you know, drive the team almost to get the job done?
I think you're absolutely right. I think if you look at the season from last year, different people stood up at different times. I think that's the great thing about cricket, is as much as you want to make runs and take wickets every single game, it's really impossible. So the way that there were so many contributors across last season really allowed us to get into the position that we were in the final. And then I think that was really showcased by someone like an Emma Mannix-Jeeves, who was able to come in and make her first 100 for the Tigers in a final and do it so convincingly as well. So you're absolutely right. There were so many contributors throughout the season. Macy Gibson had a fantastic year with the ball. Rachel Priest fired with the bat with us at different times. And then there was just so many role players along the way as well. So, yeah, I think it's been amazing that during that season, when we were reviewing, we were making sure that we understood that, you know, we're going after positive mistakes, everybody's on the same train, so to speak, and we're really clear on how we want to play. And at different times, that will come off for different people, but we absolutely all are determined to play the same brand of cricket, knowing that it's giving our entire squad the best chance of being successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned there about Emma in the final. Now, we actually spoke to her yesterday, and she mentioned that you helped her so much out in the middle of the crease, you know, just telling her to go about her game the way that she does. So to kind of flip it, what was it like for you out in the middle during that game? If you can take us maybe back into your mindset throughout there, made 111, which is incredible. And what was it like to bat with Emma out in the middle when she made her 100 as well?
Yeah, it was really exciting. You know, it was really, I guess, Emma's first season where she was given a lot of opportunity. And, you know, just sort of seeing her improvement throughout the season. We had lots of conversations along the way, and myself and Sally-Ann Beams were really trying to, I guess, pump her full of confidence and encourage her to play the team brand, which would have been extremely difficult for Emma at the start, because as a young player, you get into a squad, you get an opportunity, and you just want to hold on to that opportunity as much as possible. And you just don't want to fail, basically. That's your first instinct. And you want to try and hold your spot. But the way that she was able to, over the season, flip that mentality and understand that we were really supportive of her making positive mistakes in the best interest of the team, you just saw the way that she batted in that final, and it had been building over the entire season. And to be out there with her at that time, it was really special for me. She came up to me at one point and the run chase was well and truly in line, and we were on top, and she came up to me, she's like, do you think I need to go a bit harder? And I was like, whoa, I think we're doing just fine, Em, like, you know, just reining in a little bit. But I absolutely loved that at the time, because she was like, you know, do I need to go a little bit harder for the team? Like, I'm prepared to do it. And it wasn't about her at all. It was about, you know, winning that game for the team. And I just thought that completely showed her mentality and how much she wanted to put the Tigers first and play the brand of cricket that we'd been talking about. And it was just so exciting for me to be there with her and to have that, you know, huge partnership that I know that we're both going to, you know, really remember for the rest of our lives. And, you know, it's probably something that I'll reflect more on at the end of my career, but that really was a special moment for both of us in our careers and a real highlight.
Yeah, well, a history-making partnership for sure. And yes, one that I'm sure many other people will remember watching on. But finally, just one more on that win last year. Now, we've spoken to quite a few of your Tasmanian teammates about this WNCL win. And they've all mentioned, you know, how much it not only meant to them, but to win it for you, because that it was your first win as well. And you've been in and around the game for quite some time. And every single person spoke so highly of you and how much it meant for them to win it for you. So what does that mean, I guess, to you, knowing that your teammates wanted to get the job done, not only for the team, but for you as well?
Yeah, well, I just sort of got some shivers, like, listening to that. That's pretty cool. They're a pretty quiet bunch sometimes, so they definitely wouldn't say that to me. So it's pretty special to hear you say that. But yeah, I just feel incredibly lucky to have amazing teammates who, you know, I moved down and they didn't necessarily know me, hadn't really played with me, had played against me. But I sort of came down and had a pretty strong vision of how I wanted the team to go about things. And coming in first season and captaining, you know, there's no guarantees that the team's going to take to you as a leader or really buy into your vision. So I was very lucky that, you know, I had the buy-in from the group, and that success certainly wouldn't have been possible without everybody buying into that vision alongside me. So I feel extremely lucky that, you know, that they wanted to get the job done, not just for themselves, but I guess they understood that we had a fantastic opportunity, and winning a WNCL title is not easy. I guess they sort of had seen that I'd made it to the finals a number of times with different teams and had yet won one. So I guess, yeah, to have that first win for Tasmania and to get that in the trophy cabinet for the organisation, for all the players that came before us, and hopefully inspiring the next generation of Tasmanian cricketers as well to want to be a part of, you know, the future of the sport in Tassie is really special.
Yeah, and just quickly on just one more on Tasmania stuff. Obviously, you know, you talked about role models there, and, you know, the next generation of Tasmanian cricket really wanted to be inspired by this. Was that another reason why you moved down from Victoria to sort of be a trailblazer, almost be the face of Tasmanian cricket?
Not really. I guess for me, first and foremost, like, I moved for personal reasons to be in the same state as my partner. But I guess the thing is, like, on one hand, I made the personal move, but I wouldn't have made that move if I didn't feel like I couldn't also achieve, you know, the dreams that I still have in my own cricket career as well. So after having the conversations with Cricket Tasmania, I really felt comfortable that I was able to achieve both, to be in the same state as my partner, but also to be able to go after things in my own cricket career as well. So I'm not sure I ever envisaged coming down to be a trailblazer as such, but I did want to come down and make sure that I felt like I could still improve as a player and still offer something to it, to the organization. And the way that they embraced me with open arms from the beginning, I felt really respected and valued, and felt like, you know, they really believed in what I sort of saw that we could achieve, and how I wanted to go about it. And I've had the complete backing of the entire organization from day one, which makes my job so much easier as captain to know that we're all on the same page. And I've really enjoyed the move. It's really reinvigorated me, so to speak. And when you get to a certain place in your career, it's not necessarily about the runs that you score, or anything like that. Like, you want to be able to give more to the sport, and I get so much enjoyment out of the team success that I'm just having really the best time.
Wonderful. And now, so moving on to some international stuff, obviously you've achieved a lot with Australia, but if we go right back to the start when you were breaking into the Australia team, it was 2009, there was a World Cup year, and you were playing some good cricket coming through the underage sides, but just missed out on selection in 2009. Did that sort of drive you to become a better cricketer in the cricketer you are now?
I was selected on that 2009, but I didn't play. So I spent the tournament on the sidelines, which it was just an amazing experience, to be honest. I was sort of, I was pretty naive growing up, to be honest, around the Australian stuff. I was definitely picked on talent, not hard work or necessarily bulk runs being, you know, in the account, so to speak. So I was just extremely lucky to have been picked, and for the selectors to have seen something in me. And I don't necessarily feel like I was ready for it. I had no idea what international cricket was about. I was pretty naive at the beginning of my career, that's for sure.
So was that something, you know, did you take the positive side of not playing in that World Cup? Was it one of those where you're just like, oh, you know, sit there and take everything in and observe some of the more senior cricketers at that time? Or was it, you know, frustrating that you couldn't get out there on the park?
No, I was definitely sort of taking it all in. I had a pretty good understanding of my role before going to England. The selectors were very clear that I was going to basically sit on the bench unless there were a number of injuries. I knew exactly where I stood heading into that tournament, and it was just amazing for me to be part of a World Cup squad to start off with, and to sort of, you know, be training with people that I really looked up to and really idolized growing up. And that was really special, just to be a part of the program. It was certainly different back then what it is now, and you know, there wasn't as much scrutiny around. It was definitely wasn't as professional to some extent. And I just had a really good time. I think perhaps I could have taken more out of it from a playing point of view. But as I said, I was very naive when I was younger, and I really enjoyed just being a part of the team and, just lapping every moment up, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you then played some white ball cricket before making your red ball debut in 2014 in the Women's Ashes, no less. Of course, Australia lost the series, but it still must have been a wonderful experience despite that.
Yeah, it was an interesting time, actually, because myself, Rachel Haynes and Nicole Bolton were basically being trialed. It was sort of told to us that there was one spot left in the test team. And we all, the three of us, played in the Aussie A stuff as a warm-up, and we were calling it the Hunger Games at the time, where we knew one of us was going to get picked. So basically one of us was going to get picked, one of us was going to miss out, and then one of us was going to be sent home. So it was, we were calling it the Hunger Games because it was pretty brutal. And the interesting thing was it was an opening spot that was left in the team, and we were playing the Aussie A stuff, and Nicole Bolton and Rachel Haynes were opening for the Aussie A, and I was batting three. So I was like, oh, well, I'm definitely out of it. Like, I'm definitely not playing. They both made some runs, and I made a duck, I'm pretty sure. And then I was told that I was in the team, and I was like, oh, far out. Like, confidence isn't high at the minute. it was a bit of a tough lead in. But to actually don the baggy green was something that I didn't think that I would ever achieve. I felt like, you know, I'd sort of been pigeonholed as a white ball cricketer, and I didn't feel like people thought that I could play red ball stuff. And to be able to have that presented by, at the WACA with my family there, it was just unbelievable. I wish I had spent a bit more time thinking of, like, you know, how to go about it from, like, a mental application point of view, and wish I sort of understood my game a little bit more and thought about test cricket a little bit more, because it's certainly really different, and it's something that we don't really, as females, we haven't had a lot of opportunities. So it's really difficult to, I suppose, get good at something when you don't really get to do it very often, if that makes sense. So, and as someone who likes to hit the ball, I didn't really have a great understanding of how I was going to go about test cricket. It was amazing. It was a very emotional day for the family. Something that I'll always, really be proud of.
And you spoke about the lack of opportunities in red ball cricket and, in women's cricket. Obviously, we want to all see more red ball cricket, and we've got the first 5-day test in the Ashes in the English summer coming up. There's a drive there, surely, isn't there, for, you and your teammates to play more red ball cricket?
Yeah, there is. I think personally, I think there's a few other things that we sort of need to get right first. We need to keep building the foundations, so to speak. And then with the goal definitely to be able to increase the red ball stuff. But I do think if we go there without the foundations, then it might all fall apart. So we need to make sure that we get the girls ready to bowl the amount of overs that need to be bowled in test cricket, sort of lengthen the state squad. So we're putting resources into more players, because it makes sense that if you add a format, then there's going to be more players involved at the state level, and therefore be able to push for the Aussie stuff and more test matches with the different nations as well. So there's a bit of a responsibility there, I think, to get that underpinning stuff right first, and also continue to push other countries towards red ball stuff as well. I think there's a bit of a duty on Australia to get that sort of stuff done first.
Yeah, and you just talk about the underpinning things. Obviously, what would your roadmap be to more test cricket in the female game? What would you sort of be trying to set up, in a sense, to make sure that can happen?
Well, I think first and foremost, we've got 14 contracted players for each state team at the moment. And, with injuries and such, it's not enough players to, cover, you've got your 12 WNCL games, and you've also got a lot of the players that are involved in Big Bash as well. So that's a lot of games with not many people that you're putting your resources into. And so I think we've got to put more resources into more people. We've got to extend those squads, particularly because a lot of the girls at the moment are quite young. So their bodies haven't matured yet, and they're probably not quite up to the rigor of red ball. So we need to make sure that we, continue to push, the funding in the sport, make sure we retain our older players, so make it, sexy enough to stay in the sport, and so they can really feel like they can build a career as a domestic cricketer, like our male counterparts, so that we can have more players on our books, more experienced bodies, or else I just think we're going to increase the injuries. So if we can sort of get that stuff right and then introduce some 2-day cricket at a state level, and then see how it goes, keep an eye on things, and then progress from there.
Yeah, and I mean, look, hopefully stuff like that can be incorporated and we can see more red ball cricket. But I guess to go to your, the end of your kind of Australian playing career, 2019 was the last time you played, an ODI against New Zealand. And then most recently you played in Australia A. So I guess there was a big gap in between 2019 and 2022. So can you tell us a little bit about that gap? 2019, were you aware that was going to be, your last time walking out for the main 11? And what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was a pretty difficult one, to be honest. Heading into the 2000, after that ODI that I played against New Zealand, there was a new contract list for Cricket Australia, and I was on that contract list, and the messaging for me was that heading into that Ashes over in England in June, July, that I was a big part of the T20 squad, I guess, and I was sort of the spare batter heading over for the ODIs and the test. So I would sort of be on the sidelines unless there was an injury in that format. But they sort of saw me as a big part of the T20 team. So I sort of headed over there, and there was a Oz A series running alongside it. And it sort of went, I think it went ODIs first, then test match, and then T20s. So, you know, sitting on the sidelines of the ODIs and the test, I was playing with Oz A and I was doing pretty well. And then it came around to the T20s, and sort of, I guess, everything changed in that they decided to go a different direction, which they've got every right to do. But it did sort of catch me off guard, because I felt like the script had sort of changed significantly in a really short amount of time. So they just decided that they were going, their makeup of their 11 was going to look different, and they wanted to have more all-rounders in the team. And that's obviously something that I couldn't provide the team. So therefore I found myself on the sidelines for the T20s. And then, that was sort of it. So that was really hard for me. And it probably took me a long time to get move past that, because I felt like I was caught off guard, and it just sort of showcased how quickly things can change in elite sport, and how there's absolutely no guarantees and there's no security. And, you know, I did know that, but then sort of having that happen to myself, I found really challenging. So I sort of lost my way a little bit with cricket and really resented it for probably 12 months, and was trying so hard to prove the selectors wrong, that I was just absolutely hopeless at domestic level, and I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't making any runs, and I was just sort of trying so hard to control something that I had absolutely no control over. So it probably wasn't until the 12 months had passed that I realized, like, you know, what am I trying to achieve? Why am I playing cricket? You know, if I never play for Australia again, does that mean that I've failed? Or is there something else out there that really drives me? And I sort of had a really big think about it. And I thought, well, in actual fact, like, I can't control selection. As much as I might disagree with something, I've got absolutely no say in it. So I really needed to think about why I first started playing cricket. And that was because I loved the game and I loved playing with my friends. And, you know, I had the opportunity to represent Australia, and that was a childhood dream. But realistically, what I wanted to do was actually enjoy my cricket again. So I sort of made the decision to spend more time investing in other people and less time worrying about my own game. That's when I really sort of found my love for leadership as well, to be able to influence, you know, the way that I wanted a team to play. And also, I guess, like, pass down the lessons that I had learnt to younger cricketers as well, because sort of thinking about that stuff, I wish that I had have known a few more things that I did being a little bit older, when I was a little bit younger. So just sort of understanding that it's really important not to play a style where I'm scared to get out because I'm scared of not being selected, or, you know, play a certain style or way because, you know, that's what might suit that like a higher team to get selected and stuff like that. So actually just encouraging everybody to embrace their individuality at the crease. I think it's really important that players understand that they can achieve a team goal doing it their own individual way. So we always talk about that in Tasmania. We, you know, we want to take the game on, we want to be aggressive, but how that looks for me may look completely different to another batter, and that's completely okay. We really embrace that. So wish that I had known a few lessons a little bit earlier, but that's my journey, and I was extremely lucky to have, you know, had the opportunity to represent Australia where a lot of people don't. So I'm glad that, you know, after that 12 months of turmoil, I sort of turned it around and understood what my purpose was in cricket, and I've really enjoyed, you know, playing since then.
Yeah, and I guess talking about that, and when you mentioned, you know, the time in between realising trying to find the love for it again, when did commentary come into it? Was that a little bit later down the track, or was that, you know, like recently, or was that part of, you know, finding that love again?
It's really funny. People ask me this all the time. And for anyone that knows me knows that I have an absolutely horrific memory. So I don't remember anything. People be like, oh, have you played at this ground before? And I'll be like, I'm not sure. I don't think so. And they're like, yeah, you have, Junior. You've played here a number of times. And I'm like, oh, like, it's just, it's so bad. And I blame that on my mum. So I can't remember when commentary started, so to speak. I think it was while I was sort of in the Aussie stuff and I wasn't playing, and I feel like I got like an opportunity to spend like five overs in the comms box, or, you know, I was wearing the mic a lot on the ground and stuff. So yeah, but then it's sort of the last couple of years I was given a bit more of an opportunity because I was at home more, and it sort of just took off, and the crew at Channel 7 have been so nurturing to me and so supportive that I wish I remembered the story more. And maybe I should actually find out from Chris Jones at Channel 7 how it actually all happened with us, because I'd love to, yeah, sort of find out how it started, because my memory is so bad.
Is this something that you see yourself doing, you know, post cricket completely? Like, you know, you've obviously got your foot in the door in terms of you're doing it while you're playing cricket, but commentating and all this kind of stuff, is this something that you want to do post cricket?
It's something that I really enjoy. And when I was no longer in the Aussie stuff, when I was doing a bit more commentary with the team, I realized that, you know, I sort of had this thought, like, how am I ever going to find what I had in the Aussie team, like playing in a team and being really excited and having that feeling again, like, how am I ever going to feel that in another workplace, etc. But commentating with the crew, it really does feel like that team, and it's like really fun and exciting, and we all get along really well, and there's that camaraderie that you get in team sport. So I was like, oh, this is really nice to know that post cricket, like, there is a workplace out there where I like get just as much enjoyment as I do on the field. So it's certainly something that I would love to explore more. I think it, you know, comes down to opportunities and et cetera. So if there was an opportunity to do it, then I'd definitely look at, you know, doing that, whether or not that's a full-time job or a casual job and something else on the sideline. There's quite a few things that I'm passionate about. I often talk about how you know, I need more than one life, because there's so many things that I'm interested in doing that just feels like there's not enough time to do it.
So obviously you talked a little bit about the sort of the camaraderie within the Australian team and how much you kind of missed that a little bit. Is there a drive to get back to the Australian senior team, and if so, you know, how is it going in trying to sort of pull that Australia jersey back on? Is it, you know, progressing well? What are you doing to sort of get back there, if so?
For a long time, there was definitely a huge drive to get back there. But I think the last couple of years, it's more been about like my drive is elsewhere. It doesn't mean that, you know, if they called me up, I wouldn't be interested. It more just means that I want to put my energy into things that I guess are known quantities. And, you know, that is about, you know, putting all my energy into the Tasmanian Tigers and the Hurricanes and continuing to try and be the best cricketer that I can be, the best leader that I can be for those two teams, and also the best teammate that I can be as well. And just really, yeah, spend my energy engrossing myself in that, because that really is something that I enjoy. And I'm really loving it at the moment, and I'm really enjoying my cricket. So that's sort of the most important thing for me at the moment. So and also understanding that, you know, at the moment, the Australian women's cricket team is sort of going through a little bit of a change of guard. And the likelihood of me getting back in that team is probably about 0.05%. So I'm not going to, yeah, put my energy into something that I definitely have no control over. But I do feel like I've played probably my best cricket since being dropped, and I feel like I've improved a lot, and I'm a much better cricketer now than I was when I actually had those opportunities. So you can't sort of, you know, determine your own journey. So it's something that I'm just sort of, yeah, it is what it is. I don't want to define my career by how many games I've played for Australia, so to speak. So yeah, I'm absolutely loving where I am at the moment. I've got great balance between playing and being a person and continuing to you know, explore avenues of work as well. So I'm in a really good place at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about things you have control over. We certainly have control over the WBBL, and the Hurricanes had their best season in a few now, making the finals for the first time since the second edition. Obviously, you played a massive role in that. What did it mean to sort of get the Canes back? They're obviously the big team, the only team in Tasmania. What did that mean to sort of for you and for the rest of the state to sort of get to that stage in the season?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was a great first step, I think, for us. But, you know, there were a number of us that underperformed, and I was definitely one of them. So I felt like, you know, my captaincy decisions and stuff were solid, but my performances as a batter were under par, and I take full responsibility for that. So I feel like, you know, we had a really good list, and I actually felt like even though we got back to the finals, we probably underclubbed a little bit because we have such a talented list. But, you know, it's sort of monkey off the back for the Hurricanes, and I feel like, you know, it's a great first step, and I think it will help our push next season. We've got a lot of the same people contracted. We're really clear on, you know, how we want to play, and having that success in the WNCL and having a lot of the players the same really helps with that. So, you know, you take into consideration the improvement that you expect each individual to have after another year, and, you know, the team sort of understanding how we want to continue to play in that format and have a better understanding of ourselves as individuals within that team, but also the team brands. Yeah, I think I'm expecting bigger and better things next season.
That's a good thing to be expecting, especially, you know, it seems fair to call it a monkey off the back for the Hurricanes, because that, you know, they've been close and they've had, you know, up and down seasons, but to make finals, it must give the team such a lift now to say, you know, go on, we've made the finals, let's go and win it.
Absolutely. Sort of, you know, we saw that the Strikers won the competition. We'd actually beaten them throughout the season. So we know that as a group, our best cricket is good enough to challenge for the WBBL title. And it's just about now finding that consistency. So really having the confidence to go after it game and game again. And then when we are under pressure, finding ways that we can get back on top in those moments. So when we were on top, I thought we were excellent throughout the tournament. We played some really good cricket. But when the pressure was on us, we sort of need to find ways to get back on top quicker and swing the momentum in our direction. But the season just gone definitely showcased that our best cricket is good enough.
And I guess talking about WBBL now, you've played for the Scorchers, the Stars and the Hurricanes now. So do you have a favourite WBBL memory, maybe one that's stuck out to you in particular?
I'm hoping that my favourite WBBL memory is still to come, to be honest. I've been close a couple of times in terms of, you know, challenging for the trophy with both the Scorchers and the Stars. So I've had some really disappointing times in the WBBL, thanks, Lily. But, yeah, I'm hoping that a highlight is around the corner. But I've been extremely lucky to take the field with some amazing cricketers in that format. And probably the highlights would be the people that I've taken the field with along the journey. I think about, you know, people like Catherine Brunton, Nat Siver, who I played a lot of international cricket against, and then the WBBL creating the opportunity to play in the same team. That sort of stuff was really cool, playing alongside Susie Bates and Charlotte Edwards as well. And, yeah, I think that stuff would be my highlight in terms of, yeah, it just changed the way that we sort of looked at opposition. You know, we used to go away as an Aussie team and really hate everyone and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And now you sort of head away and you're like, oh, this person's so lovely and, you know, we're really good friends. And then you've got to like cross the field and it's like white line fever again. So, yeah, just having the opportunity to be able to learn off, you know, some of the greats of the game has been really special. And just having a good laugh with different people and having the opportunity to come into contact with so many different people has been awesome.
Yeah, well, the reason I asked was because I remember, like, the one of the things that I just remember watching, obviously, in the stands at Adelaide Oval was your 100 when you brought it up off the last ball. It was Aaron Osborne's last game, and I remember sitting there going, "Oh my goodness, like, are you even going to make 100?" And then you did it, and I just remember the stars just erupting, and I was like, that was just one of my like favorite innings just to watch on from. Yeah, that must have been a pretty special game, right? To win it in her last game, not a home game, but against the Strikers, and to bring up 100 as well.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, I had no idea whether it went for a six or a four or anything. I certainly wasn't thinking about hitting a six. I just was thinking about hitting it over the top because everyone was in the ring. So I knew that the most real estate was if I went over the top. But yeah, I definitely wasn't thinking about hitting a six to selfishly get 100 for the team or anything like that. So everyone always asked me about that, and I always, you know, guaranteed them no. I was just looking to hit it over the top. But yeah, my teammates at the Stars, like, that, they were so special. Like, really got to know those young kids. You know, they really picked me up after I was dropped from the Aussie team, and they really gave me a lot of energy and showed me that cricket's fun again and that sort of stuff. So yeah, to sort of share that memory with them and Erin Osborne, who I've played so much cricket with throughout the journey, and knowing that that was her last game, and sort of, you know, understanding at that point in time that all the people that I grew up playing cricket with, it was sort of coming to the end of their times, and that sort of meant that, you know, I'm much closer to the end than the beginning, and the landscape has certainly shifted from the majority of my career, sort of understanding that those players that I played with and against, there's not many of them around anymore. So yeah, that was really cool. And also, you know, having in the back of my mind that was potentially my last game for the Melbourne Stars as well. Yeah, it was a pretty cool way to finish my stint off with the Melbourne Stars.
Yeah, that's what they all say. You weren't selfishly to get for a six. That's what they all say. But no, it was a wonderful innings. And of course, you know, Stars couldn't quite get over the line. We're still looking for a male or WBBL titles. Hopefully we can get there at some point. But yeah, it's one of those where you sort of play for quite a few clubs now in the WBBL, but your heart now lies with the Hurricanes. Is it interesting now with the WBBL? You talked before about playing with and against so many cricketers internationally. What's it like coming up against former teammates? Is there sort of a bit of verbal sledging going on when you're playing against maybe Perth or against the Stars?
There actually isn't. It's more just like a great opportunity to catch up with those people that I spent so much time with. So I absolutely love it when I come up against former teammates, because it means that I can catch up for a coffee with them or give them a hug, hello, and catch up on where their lives are at. And yeah, feel like pretty mild. I haven't copped too much sledging. Probably the only person is Kim Garth from the Melbourne Stars, who gives me a little bit of stick, but she's a really good mate of mine as well. So she gives me the stick, but then she's laughing at the same time. So it doesn't quite have the same sting to it as it might be if she managed to keep it together. So yeah, I just I've been fortunate enough to make so many connections across Australia through the different teams that I've been able to play with. And I really enjoy catching up with those girls again, who I don't get to see very often.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if we move on ever so slightly, have you got a favourite cricket memory? Obviously, you've done quite a fair bit, both internationally and domestically. Have you got one you can sort of pick out?
I feel like that's a really hard question. I mean, I've been playing cricket for a long time now. What is it, about 15 years or something? For when I first started for Victoria and also my Australian career. So I feel like it's been a really long journey. And there's just a lot of different highlights. Like, I wouldn't be able to just pick one, because at different points in your career, like, different things mean different. They sort of hold more weight. Like, for instance, the WNCL title with Tasmania was definitely one of the highlights for me. Like, that was, yeah, I was like super proud that the team and I were able to get that. And that's something that I'll always really hold dear. And then I was able to be a part of a really successful Australian team as well, in terms of the World Cups and the Ashes that we won in sort of my time with the team as well. So to just pick out one would be impossible, but this might be a little bit cliche, but it really would come down to the connections and the friendships that I've made. My best mates are in cricket, and I just feel really fortunate enough that I've been able to play cricket as a bit of a career, and also have met some amazing people along the way. When I was young and growing up, I didn't think that cricket could be a job for me. I always thought that it would only just be a hobby, and I was going to be a teacher, and I was going to have a proper career, and I was going to stop playing cricket so that I could actually focus on my career out, you know, in the classroom. But yeah, to be able to see that, yeah, Elise, who loved cricket when she was sort of 7, 8, 9 years of age, to be able to actually play cricket as a job and train during the day and no longer training like till 9:30 at night and stuff like that, like that's a pretty cool achievement.
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's given that, you know, obviously there's so many who would dream to play for Australia, and given that, you know, you're one of the lucky few that have been able to do it, it must be an amazing feeling. Now, you've said, you know, earlier on that you're closer to the end than the beginning of your cricket career, but have you got any future goals, whether that be playing cricket or outside of your playing career, that you want to aspire to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to win a WBBL title. I would love to be able to get that. I would love to be able to go back to back with the Tassie Tigers. I think that would be an amazing achievement. And I just want to keep enjoying the game and being able to give back to others. And as for my goals after cricket, I'm not sure what they are just yet. I think that'll take a little bit of time, but there's things that I'm passionate about, the commentary, the PDM space, which is the personal development managers that are sort of in sporting teams around the world at the moment, which sort of focus on making sure that athletes have that balance. They're not just thinking about their sport, but also thinking about their life away from sport to make sure they strike that balance between being an athlete and a person. That's something that I'm really passionate about. I'm not sure what some of my goals are per se, but to just really keep enjoying the back end of my career and enjoying the journey as much as possible.
That's wonderful. But yeah, that's all we've got for today. Thank you so much for joining us. All the best with all the rest of your cricket. I'm sure it's going to be a really good WNCL back end of the tournament. So yeah, all the best and thank you for joining us again.
No worries. I'm sure I'll see you both throughout the summer. Thank you.
And there it is. You're swinging it out to deep, long on, a single. And look at the celebration. That's a captain century if ever there was one. Elise Villani, take a bow.
So that was Elise Villani, Tasmanian superstar, Australian superstar. You can use any number of superlatives to describe Elise Villani. It was absolutely wonderful to speak to her and about her cricket career.
Yeah, it was. Like, I still smile when I think of it because I still can't quite believe that it's just like happened. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Obviously, she was one of the key like Australian players that I watched growing up, and I'd always see her, whether it was for the Scorchers, the Stars, you know, the Hurricanes. Like, when she was in Australian colours, she was one that I definitely was like just always watched and remember watching on TV. So to be here and to interview her, you know, years later down the line is pretty amazing and something that I'm super happy that we got to do. But yeah, again, amazing interviewee, and I'm super glad we got to chat to her and Emma back to back. I think it just worked out perfectly with them too, and yeah, and the WNCL season last year. But that just about wraps up this week's episode. Now, next week, we'll be back with another guest. Make sure you stay tuned. In the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at howsatTCP. You can send us an email at howsatthecricketpodcast@gmail.com, or you can leave us a rating on Spotify as well, which would be greatly appreciated. Thank you again for listening. That is all from me this week.
Thank you, everyone. That's from me as well. See you later, everyone.